Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
We have spoken to many self-described addicts on this show, people who struggle with control around alcohol, drugs and gambling. But when it comes to addiction, you might be surprised to learn how eating disorders can manifest in very similar ways. And many people who suffer from eating disorders also suffer from addictive behaviours. Our next guest is a senior lifestyle writer at a national publication in Australia who had multiple admissions for an eating disorder. Her last admission, by the way, was the most serious, and she was placed into a specialised unit. Phoebe Bloggs joins me on the line to chat about this and hopefully offer some insightful advice for anybody listening who might be impacted by eating disorders, either directly or indirectly. Phoebe, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, it's something I suppose we don't think about, which is eating disorders. And I'm looking here, by the way, based on the epidemiology projections, an estimated 188,895 people in Ireland will experience an eating disorder at some point in their life. That's a lot of people out of a population of 5 million.
Yeah, look, I think especially, I know I'm based in Australia and I know the numbers have recently gone up even in the last 12 months. And I think whilst there is more education surrounding it coming out, I think we really need to normalise having conversations about it and that it's okay to say, you know, that you know someone that's struggling or that is or you are someone that's struggling. I think we need to normalise the conversation in general itself.
Okay. And when we talk about eating disorders, can that be eating too little and also eating too much? Is it both?
Yeah, so I know for myself as well, like I've struggled with anorexia, which is when you are limiting what you eat. And then I've struggled with binge eating, is when you are eating too much. So I think it's really important. Eating disorders aren't dictated by a size. If you have, you know, irregular eating patterns, that in itself is having an eating disorder.
When you talk about eating too little and anorexia and bulimia, of course, as well, and many people end up in a very serious situation, many people have died, by the way, it is primarily women who are affected by eating disorders. It seems to be, anyway. I don't know what the statistics on it. Maybe you can give me the statistics on that. But when you go back to when you had this problem, first of all, what age were you, Phoebe, when you started having a problem, an eating disorder?
Oh, gosh, I've struggled with it for a large proportion of my life, but I think I was probably about maybe 16, 17 when it first came on, and then I had multiple hospital admissions kind of throughout my life. But probably the most serious admission I had was around 2020. I think I was about 19, maybe just turned 20 at the time, and I was put into a specialised eating disorder unit.
So what was the driving factor? You know, because many of us kind of have difficulty understanding what would drive people to eat as so little that they would run themselves into really bad health with a possibility of all their organs shutting down. So is it social pressure? Because, of course, social media plays a huge role in this nowadays where, you know, young girls in particular, and I'm sure it affects young boys too, but primarily young teenage girls are seeing other girls, celebrities, whatever it is, having a particular size and aiming for that constantly all the time and never happy with their appearance. Is that primarily what drives this?
Yeah, I think everyone is different. I know these days there's a large proportion of girls that, you know, social media and the pressure to be thin and to be fit, you know, can push them into like orthorexia and anorexia. But for myself, it was even just a matter of stress. I was just so overwhelmed with my work at the time and, you know, trying to run around and do a million things. And I just wasn't fueling my body for the energy that I was engaging and exerting.
Mm. And what was eating an inconvenience to you? Did it feel like an inconvenience?
No, but I think I wasn't prioritizing it. I think it, like, I wasn't prioritizing my nutrition. Like, it sounds so simple, but I think, like anyone, when you are in a stressful situation, you're not thinking about getting, you know, your fruit and veg and your proteins in. You're just so distracted and you're not actually realizing that what you are putting in your body isn't enough or it's not lacking in those basic nutrients.
And did you at any stage, you know, because we hear stories of people who will, you know, purposely purge food, for example, go to the bathroom after having a meal because psychologically they don't want to keep the food inside them. Was that something that affected you?
Yeah, no, I never struggled with bulimia. I definitely know people and have been around friends and other people with eating disorders that have, but I think bulimia, again, that's a whole other ball game in itself.
And when you were placed into a specialised unit, what does that involve? Does that involve kind of teaching you or training you how to eat the right food and building you back up again? Is that what that's all about?
Yeah, so I was in there for, I think it was mainly 4 months, and I was in there with about 7 other people, so the age range was quite broad. I think it was from about like 17 to 30 at the time, and they just, you go in and it's, you know, obviously kind of like a rehabilitation center, and, you know, you do learn the basics of food again. There's classes, you know, there's therapy sessions. There's obviously no social media, no technology. You're not allowed to have your phone or only at limited times. Your family are limited to come in at certain times. There's a whole range of rules. It is very full on. I think it's probably the last resort for a lot of families and people. But I think for myself, as I was tube fed at the time for half of my admission, it was quite a big wake-up call. I think it did scare me.
And what's the connection when you know, I mentioned there at the start we were talking about addictions, be it drug addiction, alcohol or gambling or whatever it happens to be. What's the connection between addictions and eating disorders? You know, is it addicted to eating too little or addicted to eating too much or whatever? What is the actual connection? Are some people just predisposed to that?
I think a lot of things that are similar to addiction and eating disorder, sorry, similar to addiction is that, you know, you can control in addiction in a certain manner. You can control to what point you get into it and how deep you get into it, and then you lose control. And I think that's similar to an eating disorder. In the beginning, you know, they say it starts off in a matter of control and you can control what you eat. And then I think, you know, you get to a certain point and you've lost that control because it's become like routine. You're scared to go against it. You feel like you have to keep going because you're kind of in too deep. You don't know anything else. I know for myself, even though I wasn't happy with where I was and, you know, I could tell I was losing weight, I was a bit stuck because I didn't want to go backwards, but I also didn't want to go forwards because it was too scary. So I think similar to addiction, you just get caught in that cycle and it ends up being easier to keep repeating the process.
And you mean, for example, are you more likely to have, say, an alcohol misuse syndrome if you have an eating disorder? Are you more likely to venture or delve into other addictions if you have an eating disorder?
Yeah, I think if you have one addictive trait, like even if that's not even associated with eating, I think you are obviously more likely to lead into addictive behaviours. I think, you know, for myself, I came out of having an eating disorder and I was slowly recovering, and then I think it was a few years later and I was struggling with binge drinking, and I think it kind of just had a domino effect and I did fall into another addictive trait.
Okay, and what was that? That was alcohol, was it?
Yeah, that was alcohol.
Okay, and did it take you long to get out of that, and did that just compound the problem that you already had with the eating disorder?
Yeah, I think obviously like I was fluctuating in between weight at the time and, you know, only being quite a small frame to begin with, I think, you know, I obviously wasn't in a position to just binge drink in general without feeling it quite heavy. So I think definitely when I started binge drinking, it wasn't, even though I did struggle with it, it wasn't a long-term struggle because I physically just can't keep up with it. But I think it was just an outlet. I was trying to numb whatever I was going through in the recovery process and, you know, drinking and then over-exercising and trying to burn off what I had drunk, and it just became another addictive like process, and I was going in loops. And I think sometimes you need to go through it and come out the other end to be able to look back and think, you know, oh my gosh, I was in the wrong if I just did this and this differently.
I mean, anorexia, as we all know, is a deadly disease. In fact, experts suggest it's one of the most dangerous illnesses that can impact men and women. But up to 10% of people, I believe, roughly, with anorexia will die within 10 years of getting the disease. And up to 20% could die after 20 years. So, you know, did you realise at the time how dangerous that was to you, you know, when you were at your worst points? Did you realise how dangerous that was, or... you know, had you kind of minimized that in your mind? Did you understand how dangerous it was?
Yeah, I think, and I do know eating disorders are one of the diseases with the highest mortality rates, which is just crazy to think in today's generation. But yeah, when I was probably at my peak unwell and I was, you know, very, very underweight, I was actually told that, you know, if I didn't get better within probably the next month or so, I would be looking at, they didn't think that I would make it, which whilst it did scare me at the time, I was just so fixated on, you know, I really wanted to change, but I didn't know how, and I couldn't go backwards and I couldn't go forwards. But I think when you are in that mindset, it's hard because you do know how unwell you are, but the fear of changing trumps anything else. And that's why they say if you do get help, it has to be very selective and they have to know you and how to really know how to get through to you. But I think for me as well, you have to get to a certain point in your recovery and, you know, you can receive as much help as you want at the end of the day, but you really have to, you know, flip that switch and want to recover. Otherwise, you're just getting all this outside, you know, help and education, which is really important. But at the end of the day, it is you that has to make the decision that you want to get better.
And what are the kind of triggers, you know, that I suppose would cause somebody to slip back into that situation? You know, somebody who's recovered, you know, are there triggers that make you slip back? Are they social triggers, you know, seeing somebody looking well in a dress, something as simple as that, something else, or wanting to look like somebody else or wanting to look and feel a certain way? Are they the kind of triggers?
Yeah, like I think it's obviously, again, different for everyone, depending on, you know, if they're struggling with anorexia, orthorexia, bulimia. But for myself, I know when I'm, you know, just super stressed, when I'm so stressed and run down, it can be easy to, you know, not prioritize what I'm eating and things like that. And then I know obviously there's been times and there might have been a trend on like social media or even, you know, when it came about and all the walking trends and all that. I think it's hard because in today's generation, so many trends and things like that fixate on appearance and what we look like. And when you are, you know, totally consumed by what you look like and what you eat, and then a trend comes out and it kind of stems off that, it's hard not to think, should I alter my body again in that way to fit in with this crowd? And I think that's where a lot of girls get caught up, and men do get caught up in, you know, even if they're not following the trend, they'll still know of it. And people will talk about it and it will again circle back to what you look like.
I mean, can, you know, like for parents out there, I suppose, of teenagers, you know, I suppose, are there ways to kind of spot somebody slipping into this? Because, look, some people are just quite thin. You know, they don't eat an awful lot, and that could change as the life goes on. But when we're getting to a dangerous point or where it becomes an addiction or when it becomes a problem, how do parents recognize it becomes a problem?
I think for myself, I know when I was really struggling and I was stressed and eating less and getting run down, I started to lose a bit of motivation. I started to distance myself from friends and, you know, it was nothing that they were doing. I was just kind of like, I was scared to go out. I didn't know, you know, where we'd be going, what food we'd be having. And I think obviously that's more in the serious cases. You can kind of tell people are slipping off, but maybe more in the beginning, you know, that the signal or sign might be, you know, they're cutting out certain food groups. They're starting to limit more and more and more what they're eating. They're restricting certain things when they're going out. They might be talking about food in a different manner than what they originally have. They might be commenting. It may not even be about what they're eating. They might be commenting on what you're eating and how much, you know, you or your family, like, has changed and what they're eating, you know.
Yeah.
It can fall under so many different umbrellas, and I think it's hard to say, but it is one of those situations where you are sometimes walking on eggshells, and that's just the nature of the disease and how you have to approach it.
I mean, was it difficult, for example, you know, and I don't know what your situation personally was in relation to having relationships, but is it difficult when you're recovering, you know, from an eating disorder? I mean, are you open with your partner? Is it, you know, hard when it comes to, you know, I suppose living with somebody and cooking together, for example, you know, is that complicated when you're in a relationship?
Yeah, I think definitely at the time when I was very deep in my relationship, I just completely, deep in my eating disorder, I just completely stop dating. It was just, this is when I was very unwell. I just couldn't, it was too hard to explain to people what was going on. And then when I did start dating and, you know, on like apps and things like that and, you know, explaining to people what I was going through, it was almost just, it was just too much energy and, you know, someone else can't really understand it and you can't ask them to. So I just completely would either, you know, end up ghosting people, not talking to them. And, you know, my friends are like, oh, like, you know, why aren't you dating and why aren't you? And I was like, it's just too hard and breaking down that process. And, you know, now I'm in a really healthy and happy relationship. And I think it's definitely something now that I'm working around and having the discussion with my partner, you know, how they can understand me better, how they can be there for me, because it is a big thing for someone to take on, even if, you know, they're not your family and you may not be living with them yet. Like, it is a big thing to ask someone to understand and, you know, say the right things and do all those things. And there's no manual, there's no guidebook. So, but I think that is something that people don't really think about, is those that are still struggling and still in the recovery process and having to share that experience with someone that's not direct family. It can be a very, can be a very difficult thing.
I'm looking at, there's a text in here from a regular texter to the show. Obviously, I won't mention anybody's names, but it says, thank you very much for this topic. I've been suffering with an eating disorder since I was 14 and I'm now 35. I have two fantastic kids, a loving husband, but I've relapsed with bulimia after so many years. I feel I am putting my life in danger, but no one knows what's going on. Please let me know where I can seek help. That must be so difficult. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, that she feels that she's so alone, you know, that nobody else knows where she can get, you know, that she has a problem at the moment and she needs to get help. Now, I know Jane is going to send her a couple of links there to try and, you know, get some good advice. And I'll read out some of those links later on as well here in Ireland. I know it's probably different in Australia. But when you wanted to get help the first time, that's probably the hardest thing to admit you have a problem, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I was in denial for so long. And, you know, when I was even deep in my eating disorder and I was in hospital, I was still, you know, in denial. And I think for me, I didn't go straight to specialists. I was more comfortable, you know, having a chat with my family and, you know, having them say, you know, you like, it can't go on like this and, you know, we need to take the next step forward. And obviously, you know, you need to be involved in that. Because I was just, I think I just turned maybe 18 or was just 17 at the time. So I think there's ways to go about it. Getting direct specialist help and, you know, advice from the experts is probably the best thing, is the best thing to do. But I think as well, there's no shame in communicating with those around you. You know, I'm looking at seeking help. You know, would you feel comfortable doing this process with me? Because it can be so isolating. And I know for myself, when I was very deep struggling and just going to these specialist appointments and things like that, these people that you're connecting with, they don't know you. So, again, even though you are already feeling isolated, you can feel isolated again in another layer. So I think it's really important, whilst it's important to have specialist support, try to get at least one significant other involved and you will feel less. You'll feel less alone.
It can be hard, I suppose, if you're relapsing, like our texter who sent in the text, and everything was fine and, you know, married, two kids, and then all of a sudden you're back down that road again. It can be hard to make that admission to your partner, because some people feel that, you know, oh, I failed or I've gone back there, but that's not the case at all. And it's always important to remember that you're not alone, because people always feel that, am I the only one who suffers from this? And maybe I should keep it to myself because it's embarrassing. Whereas that's not really what you should be doing. Firstly, you're not alone. And I said that to our texter as well. You're not alone. There are lots of people out there who can help. And there's lots of people who've been through this and worse.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, when I was struggling with my eating disorder, I would, you know, I would recover and I'd come out and be going well and then I'd relapse. And I'd come out and be going well and I'd relapse. And, you know, I've been in recovery now and I'm doing quite well. And then, you know, last year I had a little relapse and I've had a little slip up, and then you just got to keep going. But I think the hardest thing is, you know, I did the same. I tried to hide it when I did relapse and, you know, not tell anyone. And I think as well, what people sometimes don't realize eating disorders and any, you know, bulimia, orthorexia, all eating disorders, they do affect every aspect of your life, whether you'd like to admit it or not. But they do impact every single aspect of your life. So if it's impacting you, it's going to impact something else. If it's impacting something else, it's going to impact somebody else. So I think it's really important to speak up when you are struggling. It's there's no shame in it. You know, there's so many people. I think I did an article on it maybe a few years ago, and this was the first time I spoke about having an eating disorder. And I just remember I got, you know, so many girls, even a few men contact me on social media saying I'm going through the same thing. And I think it's just the more people that speak up, more people are going to come forward. But you are never alone in what you're going through in this disease, because so many people are out there silently struggling and they just won't speak up. But relapses in today's generation, they are normal. But I think it's recognizing that, you know, you can go backwards. I think it's natural and it's going to happen. It sometimes it's just the nature of this disease, but you have to realize that you can't go back there long term. It's not sustainable. You know, it's just like a fix. It's a temporary high.
Yeah, and it is that feeling of like everything else, you know, like an alcoholic, like a drug addict, like anything else, you're the one who has to admit there's a problem, and you have to talk to people about it. And then you, like, that can be embarrassing, you know, to admit to somebody, you know, that you might feel upset with yourself or whatever. And then you have to admit it to somebody that you love, that I've got a serious problem, when all along you might have been arguing that you don't have a problem. I'm just not hungry or whatever. You know what I mean? So you now have to admit that you do have a problem, and that can be tough, can't it?
Yeah, I think it can be extremely hard, and I think it can be, you know, quite shameful, not even to just, you know, like family, but it can be friends as well, having to break down, you know, to different friend groups about what you're going through, and, you know, and having even like a new relationship, new partners, and explaining, you know, this is what I've been through, this is where I'm at. Like, it can be tremendously embarrassing, and, you know, you are putting yourself on the line. But I think the thing is that you have to realize that everyone has in their life, you know, been through something, and eating disorders are quite complex, and, you know, no one's is going to be exactly the same. And, you know, someone that you are explaining it to, whilst it may be shameful, they don't exactly know how to comfort you, because they don't know exactly what you went through. So I think it's really important, you know, whilst it may be embarrassing, that saying, you know, this is where I'm at, this is what I need from you, rather than leaving the person guessing and, you know, how they can best support you, tell them what works for you and tell them, you know, how they can benefit your life in a positive way and help you in the recovery process.
I'm looking at some of the texts just finally before you go, some of the texts coming in. Somebody says, Niall, can you ask Phoebe what was the exact wake-up moment when she realised it was either take control or possibly face a declining health and death? I wish her all the best in the future. Do you remember your lowest point? I imagine it was when you went into a specialised unit. I imagine it was probably the lowest point, was it?
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the hardest things I've been through in my life, just because it was so confronting with what I was surrounded with and, you know, the people that were in there and the situation. And I think whilst it was that, there was also a large portion of my life when I came out, you know, I kind of sat back and realized that, you know, I just couldn't keep doing this long term. Like, I had a goal that I wanted to pursue, you know, with work and with life. And the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, if I don't recover from this now, I'm going to be doing this in 10, 20, 30 years down the track. And I'm not going to make it down the track to reach this goal if this is my life. Like, I wasn't, when I was really unwell, I wasn't employed. Like, I was living at home with my family. You know, I was significantly unwell. My day had no structure. Like, it was very, very draining and depressing. And I think going from that and then into hospital, I think probably the moment in hospital, you know, and having seen one of my friends go rapidly downhill and they struggled and didn't end up making it in the end, I think I kind of came out with, you know, like, I'm in that mindset at the moment of I can really push myself. And whilst it's scary, it's more scary to live this type of life forever.
And what's your relationship with food like now? Is it okay? Is it good again?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a long-term recovery process, but I'm definitely in a a lot better of a situation than I was in. And I think for me at the moment, I know everyone's different, but I'm more of an intuitive eater now. So, you know, if I feel like something, I've got to have it. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is. It doesn't matter, you know, kind of where I am. I'm just really focusing on listening to what I'm craving and what I want. And I think that's another thing that, you know, if you convey that and where you're at with friends and family, you know, they're happy to go along with that and not say anything, you know, because even though you are in recovery and you have a better relationship with food, you know, your relationship with food now is still probably going to look different to then to those around you. So I think as well, you know, even if you are eating normally and happy and just conveying where you're at again with the people around you, you know, they're less likely to make comments that may send you backwards. But I'm at a really good point at the moment, and I definitely still struggle sometimes and have bad days, but I think it's only uphill growth from here.
Well, listen, it's been a really interesting conversation, and if the conversation has helped anybody around the country listening tonight to deal with their problem or maybe talk to somebody about the problem they might have, I think we've done something good. Phoebe, if people wanted to, I'm assuming you're a senior lifestyle writer, where's the best place to kind of, if they want to have a look at your work or the stuff that you've written, where's the best place for them to join you or have a quick look?
Yeah, so I share majority of my articles on my Instagram, which is just Phoebe Blog, and then a lot of my written work on my creative Instagram, which is just Phoebe Blog Creative.
Okay, so it's Phoebe Blog, and that's PHOEBEBLOGG, Phoebe Blog, if you want to go onto Instagram. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Phoebe, for sharing your story tonight. And I wish you well in the future. Thank you very much indeed.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.